Hello, hello, and welcome to Focus with Angela Duncan, where we focus on God's heart, God's love, and the truth of His Word. I'm your host, Angela Duncan. Thank you for tuning in tonight. I am super duper excited about this show, guys. I could go on and on just about this woman. I'm going to read her bio, and I'm just going to let her, after I'm done, you're going to understand why I'm super excited and why I'm just so elated to have her on the show. Please welcome Paige Means Hopper to the show. Paige is an Oakland native. She has an MA and a PR. She's the CEO of Heaven on Earth Empire Publishing and Media Company. In the year 2000, she had an experience that exposed her to the truth of her ancestors' suffering during American slavery. This launched her personal journey to healing, which for two decades, she has used to help free others affected by the painful legacy of these generational wounds. Please welcome to the show, Ms. Paige Hopper.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, thank you for that wonderful introduction. I'm honored to be here. Thank you so much.
I'm honored. They can see your book on the screen, but I have my own copy and I am super excited. It came in today and I cannot wait to dive into this. I'm so excited. I'm just so excited to hear what you have to share and what God has just downloaded on your heart. So let's just jump right in. I don't got no time to waste because I want to glean everything from you that I can. So with that said, let's talk about how this book came about, how this whole journey started for you.
Okay. Well, I was in my mama's womb. No, I'm just kidding. So first of all, thank you so much. It really is an honor to be here. And if y'all knew what it took to get here today, you would just, it's a whole other show. But I do want to thank some folks who prayed for me today because I had an attack against my body and I'm here now, right? And even looking a little bit cute. So, you know, it was just that kind of day. But I want to first of all thank my Lord and Savior, who is absolutely the everything in my life. My husband, Michael, who prayed for me, Angela and her husband, Rachel, my girl at Moms of Miracles, Rebecca, my editor, my cousin Patricia, Yesenia, Genoa, my cousin Shane for sending me that beautiful worship music, and all the people who prayed for me who I don't even know. It solidified for me once again, as I was explaining to Angela one day not too long ago, my position in the kingdom and what it is that God has appointed me to do. And there's no more hiding, no more running, no more hiding. Here I am. And so I just want to thank him and to say that last night we were talking about, you know, when does family business become village business? Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a moment that definitely becomes kingdom village business when one of our generals or anyone in any position where we're going to be freeing souls, right, comes under attack. Don't ever do that by yourself. Let's just start with that. Okay. So thank you very much for allowing me that. I'm Paige Means Hopper. I am the author, obviously, of Healing the Wounds of American Slavery and actually the founder of the movement that's beginning to take momentum now, Healing the Wounds of American Slavery, or just Healing the Wounds. And it all comes from this book. And it's so funny. I was talking to Angela the other day, and she asked me how this whole thing came about. And I told her, well, it certainly didn't come about because one day I woke up and said, by George, I think I'll write a book about healing the wounds of American slavery. That's not how this book came about. And it's taken me 20 years to write it. Not because I can't write. I've been writing since I could hold a pen. That's not why. It's because of what God downloaded that he wants to come across clearly to his people. So my husband and I were married in 1997. And by 2000, there were just some things that were going on in our life, right, that we needed help with. And so we went to our pastor for prayer. We searched all over the Bay Area for somebody who could pray a powerful enough prayer to help us get a real breakthrough, not only in our marriage, but in our professions, in the, you know, our community, and all the things that we were doing. I was on track to become a city council member in the city of Oakland, which is where I was born. My husband, you know, he's always been, you know, he has a great family name in the Bay Area, and he's always been a very warrior-like social worker, right? MSW. And just doing incredible things in the community. And we were happy doing the things we were doing, but we just kept saying there must be more because we're getting blocked and we're having problems here. And there was nobody who could pray us through the way we needed to be prayed through. My husband came across a book called Pigs in the Parlor. I don't know if you know about that book, but if you've never heard of it, go get it. Don't delay. Essentially, the theme of Pigs in the Parlor, really quickly, because I know this is about my book, but hey, this is a foundational piece. The book is about, if you think about a pig in a parlor, back in the day when our grandmothers used to have those living rooms where you could eat off the floor, was so clean, and the little plastic on the sofas and all that kind of stuff. I know grandmothers are 30 now. They don't do that. But, you know, the old meemaws and stuff, mamas, you know, they would do that. And once they had that room spick and span, oh, baby, you couldn't play in there. You couldn't sit on the sofa in your club. You couldn't do anything up there because that room
was
the company. That's a special room. And so when we think about our temple as being a home where the Holy Spirit dwells, we want it as clean as possible. Why would you clean up your temple to a point and then let pigs reside there? And so that's what Pigs in the Parlor is about. It's about cleaning out all those things in your temple that don't belong there, that are blocking you from a relationship with God, that are blocking you from going forward and doing everything in the power in which you were born and intended and God desires you to do. So we read that book and we started doing prayer on one another, right? Deliverance prayer. And we got to a ceiling. We were doing really great. It was really working.
Right.
We got to a ceiling and it just wasn't working as well anymore. It's like, you know, we needed a spark. We needed a connection. We needed others to come in and support us with the prayer. So in 2000, we contacted the distributor of that book and we wanted to know who wrote this. We know who wrote the book. Where are they? And are they still doing this kind of prayer? And the publisher, distributor told us, well, you know what? They're still alive, but they're very old and they don't do this anymore. But we know a sweet gentleman down in Thousand Oaks, California, who does this. I said, sweet, we need some power. We don't need sweet, we need power, right? So, and I said, where's Thousand Oaks? You know, I'm a Bay Area baby. I didn't know where Thousand Oaks was. So it's down in Southern California. So for three Sundays, 3 months in a row, we came down to Southern California and we received prayer. Well, on one of those days, on one of those days, something very special happened. But before I go there, I'm going to take us back.
Okay, let's do it.
Don't worry, I'm going to come back here, but I'm going to take us back and bring us up to that moment. Okay. So when I was about 5 to 7, somewhere in there, my brothers and I used to visit my grandparents down in Pixley, California. Pixley, California was near Modesto. It's like central California where it gets very, very hot during the summer. I mean, scorching, like you talk about triple digits. It was really, really hot. But they lived on a little farm, my grandparents, Nana and grandfather. Very creative, right? Grandfather. We called our grandfather, grandfather. And so Nana would cook us these incredible meals all day long, like country breakfast and lunch and dinner. And grandfather would tell us stories. And the stories were like for our edification, for our entertainment, our education. It could be anything, right? They were usually related to his life in the South. So this day we were there scorching hot under his shade tree in the front yard. And Nana was inside cooking, and my dad was sitting there with us, all five of us. I have four brothers. I'm the only girl. And grandfather lights up his pipe, as usual, right? Puffs out a few puffs. And on that last puff that comes out of his mouth, he says, you know, I used to be a hobo. Now I'm all excited. I'm a storyteller girl, right? I'm Little Miss. I've been writing since I'm three. I love a good story. So I scoot really close to my grandfather. I'm like almost, my head is almost touching his knee. I'm that close. I look up and I'm like, go ahead, grandfather. Tell your girl the tale, right? And so my grandfather began to tell a story about he and his friends. They were in the deep South and they used to jump trains to go here and there. This day they were on a train going up north. And as they were coming off of a train or getting on a train, they were at a platform somewhere, station. And these white boys came up to them and they said, where you think you're going? And grandfather and his friend said, well, you know, we're going up north, sir. You know, sir, whatever, because that's how they used to talk back then. We're going up north. And they said, nah, you ain't. You're coming with us. And I don't know what happened to grandfather's friends, but what he explained happened to him was that one of them or all of them beat him to a pulp and then stuffed him inside of a tin shed in the blazing hot summer heat of the deep South. And my grandfather was in there for at least 3 days with no food, no water, and nowhere to relieve himself except on himself. And he almost died. And as my grandfather is telling this story, I look over at my father, and my father looked like his insides were just cringing. And his face was full of something that looked to me like rage and anger. And I couldn't figure out why.
Hold on. Were you still there? Was I there that whole time?
Yes. No, you went away, but I was still there.
Praise him. Okay. Because my internet just straight went down. You know, that's never happened. Just, I'm so glad you kept talking. Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. So we're with grandfather. He's the hobo. These guys beat him up, stuff him in the hot tin shed. And I'm looking at my father as my grandfather's telling this story for clues of what to do. I'm five, I'm six, I'm seven. Like, what do I say? What do I do? Like, what's going on here?
Right.
But my father offered no clue except rage. Mm. And it looked like his eyes were watering up. I've never in my life seen my father cry. And his eyes were watering, but he didn't let a single tear fall. It was like he was storing up his rage for something, you know, later. And I looked at grandfather and he was telling the story just matter of fact. But what happened to me that day, my body, my mind, my soul, was that racist, racial incident, that brutality, that was the first time that I had ever encountered someone that I loved as much as I loved grandfather. And I loved grandfather.
Yeah.
I still love grandfather. And what that did is it planted itself into my DNA as information.
Mm.
Now, back to the church.
Come on.
We come down from Oakland to Thousand Oaks, California, and someone is praying for me. Now, deliverance prayer is a little bit different than most prayer that we think about. Mm-hmm. Deliverance prayer is when you reach a level where there are things happening inside of you that you can't explain. You're doing things you don't want to do. You can't do the things you know you're supposed to do. It's like Romans 7 when Paul talks about these things, right? Mm-hmm. Those things which I would do, I don't. Those things which I don't want to do, I do. You know,
right.
you get to a point where people are telling you, well, just pray more. Well, just read your word more. Well, just, you know, focus more. Well, just join a group. Go to therapy. Do this, do this, do that. But God's people have something very special. He designed us very specially. And He designed a very special mode of operation called deliverance prayer. So I'm receiving deliverance prayer. And this guy, now let me tell you, we walk in, Michael and I are the only Black people there. Everybody in there is white. And the majority of them are either from the Midwest or the Deep South. So there's already energy going, right? But we're desperate. We need help. And the man with the book said, this is where they are. So we go, and someone's praying for me. He is a white man. Oh, he's about 35 to 40. And he sidles up next to me, and he starts praying deliverance for me. And I'm like, okay, well, this is how it goes. This is how it goes. And the next thing I know, what comes out of his mouth is he's praying for the spirit that left residue inside of somewhere in me, generational residue, called can't have the white man's baby.
Okay.
And yeah, that's what I did. Okay. But I didn't have long enough to pause in that, okay, because the next thing I knew, I started having the memory of someone else. Now, let me explain this to you, because when it first happened to me, I thought I might be going crazy. When I explained it to the first 2 to 5 people that I explained it to, I think they thought I was crazy too. But then Dr. Joy DeGruy, who has been doing the work of healing these wounds for a long time, right? She wrote her book way before mine came out. Mm-hmm. I went to go see her in 2003 for the first time. The second time I went to go see her was in 2010. When I went to go see her in 2010, she had a new slide in her slide deck, and it was about epigenetics.
Mm.
Up until that point, I really didn't understand what had happened to me, except that I knew for sure I had had someone else's memory. And let me tell you what the memory was. And then I'll tell you what epigenetics is. The memory was of a slave child. This slave child was about 14 years old, a young 14, a female child. Now, mind you, I'm sitting in this church receiving prayer. I'm dressed from head to toe. I've got these pumps, like, you know, high heel shoes on my feet. But yet I feel in this memory warm cabin floor under my feet. I'm in a church. I smell the perfume and whatever else is going on in the church. And yet I'm smelling field cotton as I'm having this memory. Now, I'm a city slicker girl. I come from Oakland, California, the Bay Area. I've never smelled field cotton, even to this day. I've never smelled field cotton, but I know what it smells like because I had someone else's memory of it. This child is in a slave cabin, and there are beams of light coming through the slats in this slave cabin where her family is lying all around. And she goes to the door, pulls it open, looks out, and sees just rows and rows and rows of cotton as far as her eyes can see. And all she can think is, I got to go out here and pick this cotton today. And if I don't pick the amount I'm supposed to pick my quota, pick my weight in cotton, they're going to take me around back, still going, and they're going to beat me. And that sun is going to be hitting my back like the devil's eyes. And those stalks going to be pricking my fingers and making me bleed. But I better not get no blood on this cotton. I mean, this child is having this memory, but in my mind.
So you were hearing all that?
I was there. I was there. Now, let me explain what epigenetics is. Epigenetics is a scientific study of how trauma transfers from one generation that has gone through a specific trauma down to the next generation. So it's not only the memory of the trauma itself, it's the feeling, the physicality of it. It can be all of that. There have been a number of African-American, Black American, I say, scientists and physiologists and others who have studied this phenomenon trying to figure out what this is. But when Rachel Yehuda, a Jewish scientist, came along in the, I guess, 1990s, early 2000s, And she did a study on Holocaust victims, their descendants. What she discovered is that there was a strand in their DNA in a very specific cell that was distorted in the cells of the Holocaust victims themselves, the one who literally went through the trauma, the Holocaust. Their descendants never went through it. But yet when she checked their DNA, that same cell was distorted. They also had done a study on plants. I wasn't interested in plants. I didn't study that. But they did do a study on animals. They did a study on mice with this epigenetics. And so what they would do is they would take a pregnant mouse. They would let her smell a cherry blossom while she's pregnant, right? And then they would torture her while she's smelling the cherry blossom. They did that repeatedly, sort of like Pavlov's dog, right? With the saliva bell and all that. But when she had her litter of mice, they never tortured the litter of mice. The litter only had to smell the cherry blossom and they would go ballistic. So let's fast forward to today. When there are so many obstacles in our way, so many wounds and so many things that come up for us that if we had our choice per se, we wouldn't do those things. We would be more unified. Why can't we unify more? Why do we hate each other so much? Why is there so much jealousy, crabs in a bucket, rage, death, murder, black on black crime? Now, I want to be very careful going into this conversation because I am not victim blaming. I would never do that because we have had enough torture. We've had enough wounding. We've had enough tragedy for another 500 years. Thank God, if you look around, you notice we're starting to wake up and come out of all of that. So as I'm getting more and more prayer, don't know about the epigenetics yet.
Yeah.
But as I'm getting more and more prayer, my husband's praying for me. My pastors are praying for me. My sisters and brothers in the church are praying for me. Everybody's praying for me. And as I'm having these prayers, like all this stuff is coming up that doesn't belong to me. It doesn't. It's generational behavioral patterns, generational behavioral emotional patterns that don't belong to me. I never lived that life. Why is this here? So as I'm getting this prayer, receiving it Sunday after Sunday, Thursday after Thursday, time after time after time, whenever my husband can pray for me, the Lord told me to get a binder and a pen, not your iPad, not your computer. I don't even know that iPads were that popular then, but he told me to write it with pen and paper to really get the whole aesthetics of it, to get all of it, the kinesiology, all of it, right? The whole experience. So as I'm getting prayer, he's delivering to me what's coming out. And one thing I really wrestled with for a very long time was fear. Why? Because every time I came across one of these wounds, 10 of them are listed on the back of this book.
Yes.
10 main wounds. They are contained rage, damaged belief system, death, fear, grief and brokenness, jealousy, masking and pretending, mental illness, self-hatred, and under and over achieving. Any of those sound familiar?
Yes, all of them.
All of them. And fear stands alone. Inside of the book, each one, let's just take contained rage, for example.
Yeah.
Contained rage is the big boy wound. Underneath contained rage are a subset of other wounds, but fear stood alone. So as this stuff is coming up and out of me, I'm needing to write it down. I go to the etymology of the word, the root of the word. What does it really mean?
Yeah.
Where does it come from? What's its origin? And interestingly, the majority of these words, the majority of these wounds come from the European languages. And as I studied and drilled down, what I discovered is the real pain, the real programming, the real construct that was set up in American slavery and what those things that were, those seeds that were planted into the minds and the psyche and the DNA and the souls of the enslaved to the point where it has passed on to us. Mm-hmm. Right? So when I was dealing with fear, which was one of the first, shame came up a lot too, guilt, shame, fear. When fear came up, it wasn't as though, it was that I was actually wrestling with fear itself. Because fear didn't want to be outed for what it really is. And there's a lot of fear being pumped by media, by social media, by the powers that be. And the more fear that is pumped, not only into our community, because see, it's prevalent. So it can't just be pumped into one community without it hitting everyone, mm-hmm. because we're all one humanity, right? Mm-hmm. Same thing with these wounds. I thought, foolishly, that man, when I start writing this book, every time I would speak, one of the first things that would come out of my mouth was, and I wrote this unapologetically for my people, right?
I can't. So I hear you. I know where you're going. Go ahead.
Born and raised in Oakland, right?
Okay. I know where you're going.
I wrote this for my people. And one day, not too long ago, within the pandemic years, I woke up to God's voice telling me, you keep telling people that you wrote this book unapologetically for your people. Mm-hmm. He said, what about my people?
Ooh.
So what I've been finding is, although my initial gesture, right, effort was to help free my people, Black people, mm-hmm. unapologetically, what I have found is that the majority of people who are reading my book right now are not Black people.
Wow.
But the people that are reading the book, the white people that are reading my book, are getting a lot of help because these wounds are universal.
Yes.
They're universal. So as I'm going through each one of these wounds, I have to go through the deliverance first. I have to get freed first so that I can come back and write the book and show others how to get free. I've also now done the audiobook because there are some people who literally claim they cannot get through the book. It's not mm-hmm. because the book is difficult. It's broken down to like
very clear
food, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
But what it is that your soul has to be ready.
It's when deep. Ready,
the teacher appears, right?
Yeah.
And so if you can't get through the print book, which I recommend you get it because I like to highlight and all that. Mm-hmm. And it's a reference. It's a real reference. Then I would definitely recommend getting the audiobook because I will read it to you. So that's how the book came about, is that I kept on writing out all of these wounds as I would get them. And then I studied the etymology and I had 60 pages when I started, or less. My editor, Rebecca's on here. She's probably saying page. It was less than that. But I had very few pages and I went to her and I said, I have this book, help.
Right.
And I thought, and she thought that it would be done within 6 months to a year. Mm-hmm. Rebecca has now been with me for 7 years. Just helping me sort through, because what this is, Angela,
mm-hmm.
is it's offering us a whole new language from which to approach this age old, stale, status quo conversation. We keep having the circular conversation because we're approaching it from an educational base. We think mm-hmm. education's going to hit it. You know, mm-hmm. critical race theory. How
yeah.
has critical race theory been around it? And it still hasn't. I mean, I'm not saying, I don't want to discount others' works. And
right.
that came from a very legal perspective. These were lawyers who developed that theory. I don't know if people know. Most people think mm-hmm. it's educators or politicians. Mm-hmm. It was lawyers who developed that critical race theory. However, if education was going to hit it, if psychology was going to hit it, politics and policy, science, which is kind of an oxymoron because God created everything science is studying. If sociology was going to get it.
Come on.
If economics, finances, were going to get it, pour more money into it, pour more money into mm-hmm. it, then we would be past it.
Yeah.
These aren't the solutions. And again, I admire and I acknowledge and validate the work of those who have come before me, who have done all of the work in those areas, because, you know, it's all encompassing. But those things cannot in and of itself bring a solution about, because that's not where the solution is. It's not in our heads. Yes. It's not in our pocket. It's not in our hustle.
Where is it?
It's in our hearts.
Mm-hmm.
I was with a group of psychologists. A friend of mine invited me to share within her cohort. And these were all students and doctors of psychology from USC, mm-hmm. right? Ivy League, one of the best schools in the land, USC. And they are brilliant. Trust me, they are. And I have a curriculum where I went through just the first three wounds. I think I did like fear, contained rage, and maybe jealousy. I snatched one from mm-hmm. those three. And so I went through and explained, based on what I've written, what it is I wanted them to know.
Mm-hmm.
When I finished, everyone was teary.
Mm.
And they were going through their own triggers yeah. of emotion.
Yeah.
But what I found when I had the breakdown or the debriefing with them, what I found was they were saying to me, Paige, you know, you're sitting on treasure. Because even our discipline, now we're doctor level. We're not just first year students. We're not undergrads
mm-hmm.
here.
Mm-hmm.
We are doctors of psychology and potential doctors of psychology candidates. And we've never heard anything like this.
Wow.
Because psychology attempts to get at the mind and the emotions. But what happened to us, our ancestors, and is now happening to us through our epigenetic DNA experience, is our hearts were affected.
Yeah. Our generationally.
Hearts, yes, our hearts are broken.
Mm.
And one of the things that I think a lot of Christians don't want to face, because I've spoken to Christians, lots of Christians about this. Some can be with it, some can't. It's okay. I just drop the seed and move on.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I think we have a hard time reconciling or grappling with is that we believe that God broke our hearts.
Mm-hmm.
Because where was he?
Wow.
Mm-hmm. How could he allow this to happen? And I had that question. And I asked, I mean, this has been a 20-year journey. No stone has been unturned with me and God. I mm-hmm. asked him all the hard questions. And that was one of them. And I asked, and I just asked and asked and asked him, knock, 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 knock. I'm the why child. Knock, 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 why? Knock, knock, why? Knock, knock, why? And one night, super late, I don't even know what time it was. It was like super late or super early. I finally get an opportunity to go to sleep, because my husband will tell you, this thing has kept me up so many nights.
Yeah, it's powerful.
So many nights. But this one night, after I've been asking God over and over and over, why us? Why us? He woke me up in the middle of the night. I sat straight bolt up in my bed and I started screaming. Why did you do this? What? It was... And Michael will tell you, because I woke him up.
You were referring to slavery, American slavery?
I was referring to American slavery
mm-hmm.
and its aftermath, but particularly American slavery. And he said, pick up your Bible. And he began to show me scriptures.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I would never, ever victim blame. But I've got to say, that it begins with the sins of the fathers, our African ancestors. Mm-hmm. Because God showed me through the scriptures, through revelation, he showed me that he introduced himself to us first. And historically, it's well known. You can't get a white person out of a black person. Mm-hmm. But you can get a white person out of a black person. Can't get a black person out of a white person, but you can get a white person out of a black person. I've seen it. A black woman have twins. One's dark, one's like lily white. Mm-hmm. It started with us. And I don't want to go too deep in that vein.
Right.
But I will say this. A lot of people wonder why we have the rhythm we have. They wonder why we have the intelligence, why we speak in a certain way, why we communicate in a certain way with our body language, and why we have the hair that we have, and why the sun charges the melanin in our skin and gives us energy, and just there's just a lot, and we influence the entire planet. Let one of us come out with our hat onto the back.
Mm-hmm.
Let one of us come out sagging, unfortunately, you know, or do a certain day. All the TikTok trends, mm-hmm. all the dance, everything starts with us. That's not to brag. I'm just being real.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just being real. So there's a lot that the book explains that I could never tell in one sitting, but I'll tell you this. Each and every one of those wounds that God explained to me is as real gets. Think about contained rage for a minute.
Oh my gosh, I was just gonna ask you about that. Go ahead.
I should have closed my window. Contained rage. When God mm-hmm. showed me that one, oh my God. Think about it. Let's go back, way back. Let's go to the plantation. Let's go way back. And let's think about the laws in place that held us on that plantation in the first place. Let's think about being taken from your homeland, stripped naked, set up next to your relative with their genitals on you, your breast on the next person. I mean, just squished together like sardines. Let's think about the deadly voyage mm-hmm. and how so many died of white men's diseases, dysentery and all those things. I mean, but yet the might in us, the girth in us still made it across all that water in that long journey. Now you're on a plantation being seasoned, right? So as you're being seasoned, programmed, right, in this construct, programmed to forget who you are.
Yeah.
Forget it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to erase you. Essentially, I am going to erase you because I won't let you speak your language. I won't let you dance your dances. I won't let you even have your name. I won't even let you have your family. I'm going to separate you from your family and everybody that you know. And you're in this place where you've got nothing to hold on to, no hope to hold on to. And it comes down to, how do I really say this? When you've lost your God-given right, I don't want to cry.
Yeah.
When you've lost your God-given right to be who you are,
mm-hmm.
to do what it is God sent you here to do,
mm-hmm.
to be beaten, to be raped, to be separated from those that you love.
Yeah.
And you're getting angry. And more angry, more and more angry, more and more angry, but you can't express it.
Mm. That's contained rage.
Well, then where does the rage go? It creates heart disease.
Wow.
That's why African Americans, I call us Black Americans. That's why Black folks.
Come on.
Have the highest rates of heart disease. It's from a broken heart. I don't care how you eat. Because you know what? There are 100-year-olds. There are 90-year-olds who ate chitlins and fatback and all kinds of ham and bacon and everything in the world. And yet they lived to be 90 and 100 years old and never had heart disease. I'm not saying that we shouldn't eat right. Absolutely, right. We should. These are God's temples. We should keep them as healthy as they can possibly be. But I'm saying that when you contain rage like that, why do you think Black men die so much earlier than everybody else on the planet? I'm just saying.
No, now, it's so good.
Some of this, you know, has been proven scientifically. Some of it is just pure supernatural revelation. God just speaking the truth.
Wow.
But I'll tell you what, when I sat down and started really sorting through, and I came across contained rage, and that rage came up out of me, I just have to tell you, for me, everyone will have to deal with this in the God-given way. God will tell you how you deal with yours. I'm explaining in this book. I'm not saying do it like this, do it like that. I'm telling you what happened to me as a blueprint, as a support for you going through. But when that rage started coming up, I mean, I was having rage that didn't belong to me. It just didn't. It was coming down. It was coming down through the generations, through my belly and up through my voice. And when I heard my voice screaming out, I was like, who is that screaming? And I said, that's me. And what I got a hold of too in that moment is the rage that did belong to me was coming from the experience of living in this construct we call America as a Black woman. Not just hate it for no good reason. There is a spirit called image of jealousy, right? Image of jealousy is, and I'm sure a lot of your watchers, your viewers will know what this is. Image of jealousy is when you can walk into a room for the very first time, you don't know anybody in there, they don't know you, but all of a sudden they're jealous. And they let you know under no uncertain terms that we don't want you here. Black women, we have that in spades. Not only among other Americans and other countries, right? Other cultures, other ethnicities, but among ourselves.
Yep.
That crabs in a bucket is what a lot of people call it, but it's image of jealousy. You haven't done anything. You haven't said a word yet out of your mouth. People just look at you and make an assumption or presumption, and it's not even that calculated. It's a visceral spiritual kind of thing. That's playing these wounds playing off of each other. That's why we can't unite the way that we want to unite. Because of these wounds. Because of these wounds. I want to see my people free. I want to see God's people free. And I'm very passionate about that because I went through hell to get on the other side of this thing and get my feet set on a path where I could reach back and bring somebody else through. Reach back, bring somebody else through. But you got to be ready because what this land has done is that a lot of us have taken on, right? And not even taken on, but come into agreement with the construct, the programming. Right? I got to hustle and grind and get mine. I got to chase the bag. Okay. I don't blame you for wanting to get, you know, what you believe you deserve and exercising your God-given gifts and talents. And that brings in a certain, you know, amount of income and all of those things. That's fine. But to be married to be addicted to be chasing after, as opposed to cleaning up that heart so that when the money does come, you know how to filter it out to where it needs to go. There's so much. But
you know, same,
yeah, go ahead.
I want to go here real quick because you're kind of hitting this, and without going into the book too much, but you go through these wounds. And what I'm just blown away by just glancing through the book is that each wound has sub wounds or sub, yes, is that what you would call it?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so right now I'm looking at self-hatred. Mm. And under self-hatred, you have your unforgivable or unforgiveness, shame and embarrassment, emasculated men and masculine women, and denials, addictions, and escapism. I see that so clear in so many of my brothers and sisters. And when I say people, period, but I'm talking about the black
folks
right now. Right. Black folks, you know, the masculine women and the emasculated men. And it comes out of, you said, is that out of self-hatred? So I wanted to, and then you can go as much as you want, but the other one that stood out to me was damaged belief system. And so when that happens, you have a distorted reality, you're scattered and unfocused, and you have that hustle and grind. And you were talking about both of those. So I was like, I had my hand on both of them. So I feel like, you know, okay, God, there
well,
it is.
Imagine that.
Imagine that, you know? So how could you, I mean, what could you say about those two or just whatever God is leading you to say?
Well, what I can say about self-hatred is that we were taught to hate ourselves.
That part.
Our hair, our noses, our butts, our beautiful big lips, mm-hmm. our curvy features, you know, and debased by the N-word, right? Mm-hmm. Nigger, I will say it because mm-hmm. it needs to be said. And then we think that we somehow took that word, right? I'm talking about self-hatred. Mm-hmm. We took that word that was used to negate who we were, debase us, rob us of our name. And it's rather than Paige, go get such and such a girl, go fetch this, go fetch that, nigga, go get it, nigga, you no good, all this. We think we took that word and reconstructed it somehow. And now that we're using it as a weapon against our oppressor by, you know, it's like, what do you call it when you take the thing out of a bomb so that it doesn't blow up anymore, deignite it, whatever that is. We think that we've done that. We think that we've taken the power out of the word by calling each other that. But it's that self-hatred that goes into the shame. Because a lot of us are ashamed of who we are. Now, we're beginning to wake up. You may have noticed. Yeah. We're beginning to wake up some. But I mean, what I'm talking about is that such a much deeper level. The self-hatred and the shame comes from, you know, even when other people, Koreans, Chinese, mm-hmm. Latinos, name a culture, name an ethnicity of people that come to this land where our ancestors built the economy here, built the foundation everywhere you look and everywhere you breathe, our blood, our sweat, our tears, our ancestors, everything is in this land. And yet, you know, certain cultures will come here, certain ethnicities will come here. They will unite. They will build an economy within their own family, within their own community. And the next thing you know, they're flourishing. And we're just catching hold of that. Mm-hmm. We're just beginning to hear the word legacy play out a lot in our community, right? Yeah. Because we're just catching hold of that. And that's okay. Yeah. Again, I will never, ever victim shame.
Right.
Never. But at the same time, it's that self-hatred that has caused us to have heavy feet in some areas in terms of our advancement, I'll just say. You know, the hustling and grinding. You know why we do that? We do that because we're trying to catch up. Mm. We're trying to mask ourselves. We're trying to have things that can hide the shame of being the descendants of the enslaved.
Mm.
That's just one level. Get the book for the other layers. But no, seriously, that's the main thing is, think about, you know, how we see brothers and sisters with, from head to toe, designer, head to toe, the haircut, the face, just beat, the jewelry, the clothes, the car, but then they pull up to the projects.
Come.
because it's about what I'm showing the world. I'm showing the world my value. So I'm going to hustle and I'm going to grind and I'm going to make it and I'm going to catch up to that white man. I'm going to catch up somehow, clawing, scraping. There was a time, and they may still be doing it, but they were talking about, we don't sleep. We barely eat. I just hustle and grind all day, 24/7. I don't eat. I don't sleep. That's what I'm doing here. I don't know. It was out there for a long time because people had to go get that bag. I got to go get that bag. And by any means necessary, you know?
What about, can you speak a little bit about in our culture, emasculated men and masculine women, what you found is that something we can talk about?
We can talk about it. We can talk about
it. I know
it.
That I really believe that that goes all the way back to slavery. And I believe that that's a generational thing that's been, you know, it's like you said, it's a DNA thing. The good thing that I want to say, and I know you will get to that, is that we have a new DNA in Christ. So even with this is shining light. This is so we can get free. This is so we can get delivered. But the DNA in Christ makes all things new. But let's talk about emasculated men and masculine women in our culture.
You're just going right for the juggler, aren't you?
I am. I am.
And you do, and I appreciate that. So, okay. First of all, before I go there, let me say this.
Okay. Yes, ma'am.
What we often do is we want to have a kumbaya moment. Mm-hmm. We want to understand this, but we just want to get to the next part. We want to get past it. The only way past it is through it.
Yeah.
I just want to say that before I go here. Now, I will get a lot of pushback on this. All I can say is go see God.
Yeah.
What he showed me is that, first of all, in slavery, they had to emasculate the man so that the woman would understand that your provision and your protection is no longer there.
Mom.
Massa is the provider and the protector. So they would rape the men. They would bring the man out in front of the whole enslaved community and beat him within an inch of his life. They would sell the men, drag the men with horses, hang them until they were within an inch of their life, then cut them down. Just all of these things to help the whole community, make the whole community understand you all have no power because this is your most powerful chess piece on the board and he can't help you. Mm. With the woman, because the man had been taken out of his rightful place, she had to become, I'm not going to say the man, because that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
She had to become more powerful and exercise a part of herself and her being that she otherwise would not have had to exercise had the men been available to be in position to do what they were born to do. Men are born to provide and to protect their family first, their community second, and then the church, the globe, right? Women are born to be provided for and protected so that she can come into the fullness of what God has provided and created inside of her, her original design. Women create. You give a woman a house, she's going to decorate it. You know, you give a woman a pound of hamburger, she's about to make you a feast.
Yeah.
But because of that construct, reversal within that construct, we no longer have that. Let me read you a part of the book that
Please
we help you understand.
Yes.
This book is about seasoning. Mm-hmm. What happened to us on the plantation to cause us to lose our identity and become erased? I'm on page 47 if you want to read along.
I do.
This is chapter 5, Seasoning and Psychosis. Going once, going twice, sold. You have arrived at the captor's destination. There are more cages. With each new sun, more white men come to the cage to examine you. They touch you, fondle you, pull back your lips, stare at your teeth, tug at your arms, grab at your legs, poke at your genitals, squeeze your breasts. They frown, grunt, rub their chins, and consult the list in those same fondling hands. Four suns later, you're hoisted onto a platform called a block. White people stand near the block. They glare at you. There's more yanking, pulling, prodding. Humiliation, anger, fear, and mistrust overwhelm your senses. You are seething as one white man finally presses a stack of small wrinkled bills in the hands of another in exchange for you. For the rest of your natural born life, you are sold. Lock, stock, and barrel, mind, body, and soul. You are hauled off with others to a plantation where you are stored like cattle. Seasoning burns a hole in your soul. It sizzles your psyche. Your spirit is being broken bit by agonizing bit. You are being trained like a horse. You and all of your generation born into slavery are now living it. You are forbidden to use your given name. The branding iron has christened you with a new name, burning through your skin layer by layer, searing your identity, erasing you. You are forced to adopt your master's surname. You are no longer Titilayo, meaning ever joyful. You become Sarah instead. The name is heavy on your tongue, but especially your heart. Your real name was one of the last semblances of hope to return home, and now it is lost. An overseer is assigned the task of ensuring that this new burdensome name is hammered into you like a blacksmith fixes shoes to a hoof. You're forced to wear this new name from a new language and use only that language at all times. You know only enough English to obey barked orders. Fetch this, get that, pick faster, come here. Lay down and keep quiet. Your native language is strictly forbidden under threat of severe punishment. You are, in effect, being conditioned to forget who you are. Seasoning, you quickly learn, is deadly. Others are dying around you from the seasoning process. Rations are inadequate and foreign to your palate, your stomach, and your digestive system. Folks are falling like flies. You hear that new captives arrive fresh from the auction blocks, battling scurvy, malaria, and strange swellings. Those at the plantation with you collapse in the fields from the harsh, cold winter climate, a killer to your people who are used to the sub-Saharan heat of the African sun. What is happening is almost too much to bear. And it is too much for many you've come to know as family. During the 3 years of your own seasoning, you watch half of them die. Some from dysentery and malnutrition. Some from worms and the white man's sex diseases. Others drop dead from exhaustion, working from can't see till can't see, picking more than 100 pounds of cotton a day. Seasoning is savagely cruel. Your identity is purposely destroyed. All ties to your original culture are cut. You must fulfill the master's every demand, including sex, and are made to watch and listen as the master, the overseer, or any other white man rapes your people. Nearly all of the women, the little girls, little boys, and even some of the men, at his or his wife's whim. You are watched day and night. You are brutally punished for any sign of insubordination. Learning to read is punishable by death. You are forced to witness countless violent floggings. These public displays of brutalization send blatant messages to you what to do and what not to do. You see your people hanged for disobeying. Your best friend commits suicide, and so do many others. It's been years now. you begin to think yourself insane. You suffer heavy bouts of depression, dark, dark days, bitterness, resentment, constant fear, anger, hatred, and debilitating emotions hold you tightly in a relentless grip of terror. Helplessness and hopelessness set in. There is no way of escape. You forget who you are. You are no one. You are like the chameleon that changes color and texture with each new condition, situation, or environment. You lie at the slightest threat of punishment. You learn to mask your true feelings. You pretend to be happy when you're miserable. You are outwardly compliant, but inwardly rebellious.
Wow.
Your mind is constantly at war with your heart. You are human property and used as a breeder. You are made to mate with folks you don't know, or worse, your own family. You have no choice. You are forced to reproduce like dogs, and there's nothing you can do about it. 18 of the children born on the plantation come from you, but they don't belong to you. 15 have been sold away, and you are held hostage to debilitating grief. The other 3 children are the master's seed, or maybe one of his friends. It happens late one night, when the after-dinner whiskey and cigar ritual turns to the slave cabins. Tonight, they pick you. They take turns having their way. You are so enraged you could kill, but instead, you mask your urge to murder and swallow the rage. It hides in your belly. Now the next section goes into a scene. I know.
I'm feeling that.
I know. Like, I am too.
I literally felt as you were reading that, like I kept feeling like I'm shaking, and I kept feeling like I wanted to cry. So I can understand why you had to go through the deliverance of that, because that in itself, just that part. You can see the layers of that through generations, and it makes so much sense.
And if we're in a post-racial society, and if that happened so long ago that we need to forget about it, then why are you and I feeling what we feel when we hear what happened?
Gosh.
Now, the next section goes specifically to your question about emasculated men. Emasculated men and masculine women, or effeminate men and masculine women.
Yeah, you explained that wonderfully, and I know it probably goes in deeper, but my God.
Yeah, and so I just want to say that, you know, it's there in a cabin, a man and a woman who want to be married but can't because law won't allow them, but they're as married as they can be, and they share a cabin. And, you know, the man's been out all day picking cotton, got beat really bad because he didn't pick 205 pounds when he should have picked 205. He only picked 200.
Mm-hmm.
They beat him within an inch of his life. He's in the cabin. His woman's fixing him up. They haven't eaten dinner. You know, somebody has risked their life to go get some salve for his back. She wraps him up. They're falling asleep. Then boom, Massa comes in the cabin. Kicks Joe out. Because she knows what he's come for.
Mm-hmm.
They go through that ritual. I won't read the whole thing. I won't even recall it all for you. But in the end, after Massa's left his mess behind, they're lying there together in the dark. And Joe is asking her, how come you let Massa do that? And she's thinking in her mind, again, the contained rage. She's thinking in her mind, not wanting to put her husband in a worse position than he's already in.
Yes.
Degrade him more than he's already been degraded. She keeps it to herself. But in her mind, as he's asking her, why are you letting him do that to you?
Mm-hmm.
She's thinking, why are you letting him?
Yes. Yeah.
And they both know why. Mm. And so that travels down.
Jesus.
Through the DNA. Why aren't you protecting me? Why aren't you providing for me? Why are you letting men do certain things to you? Why aren't you, you know, the kind of woman I need you to be? And we take it on like it's real. We adopt it into our lives like it's real.
Mm.
But it's not. Mm-hmm. It sure feels real though.
Yeah.
But we can overcome it.
That's what I was going to say, because you know you're going to have to do a part two.
Yes, ma'am. Mm. Yes, ma'am.
We didn't even scratch the surface, and it's already been an hour, and I could sit here and listen to you talk like for 2 more.
I will say this though, as we go into part two, I will say this. This first, what we're talking about now is what the wounds are.
Okay.
By the time you get to the end of the book, I set your feet on the path.
Thank you,
Jesus. To where we're going now.
And that was what I was going to say, because we always end with hope here. And I know that you're a positive and you love God. And
yes,
God,
yes.
We wrote at the beginning, look up, there's hope. That's what you told me whenever you inscribed mine. And so we always end with hope. And I know.
Oh, there's so much hope.
There's so much hope in Christ.
We have so much more power than we know. And that's what I get passionate about, is I understand what happens when you can get this stuff out. Only one person can change your DNA. That's the one who made it.
Come on.
And see, science has been lying to us for decades and centuries. You can't change your DNA. You can't change your DNA. Well, no, that's the truth. You can't. But God can. He can heal.
God
it. He can heal it. Healing the wounds.
Healing. Y'all. Oh my gosh. Where can they go? They need to go to your website to buy this, right?
They can go on Amazon now.
Is it on Amazon now?
Yes, I'm on Amazon now. I'm on Amazon.
Okay. Okay, good, good. Because so I had looked for it.
You will need to click. When you go on there, you'll see my book. You'll see the description and all of that. You will need to click see buying options. I don't know why it's set up that way, but see buying options. I'll be right there. You just click it and your book will go out to you right away. And I'll be inscribing books for a while.
Unbelievable. And they can go to your website too and purchase that way. Is that correct?
Yes.
Tell me your website again.
HWAS.com. H.
What is it?
H.
Page.
Like Healing the Wounds of American Slavery. So HTWAS.com.
Okay. HTWAS.com. I put it on the Facebook thing, but I wanted to make sure. Is that at HTWAS.com?
That's it.
Okay. I put it on there, but for some people that are watching through YouTube, if they want to go learn more, we will be doing a part two. We've got to, because we just scratched the surface. But one of the things that is just blowing my mind is that when you see these things through your life, and you see it through your grandparents, and you see it through possibly your parents and you, and the fact that God not only revealed what the wounds were, but he talked about, and like you said, in our pre-conference, he's like, the wounds is just demons. We just need deliverance and the trauma and things like that. Hey, it is what it is.
It is what it is.
You got to be willing to go through it, but it's healing the wounds of slavery. And I love it, because we don't have a bomb in Gilead that will heal us of everything.
No.
And I'm just so excited about this. With that said, before you go, man, the comments are lit up. I'm hearing powerful. This was great. Lovely show. We got to get you back on, because like I said, we just scratched the surface. I'm going to do a book giveaway. I want to do one with yours. I have a book giveaway from the last show.
Yes.
It is called The Force Behind the Stars. That was the lady that was on the dark truth about the music industry. I did do a drawing for that. And I hope Alyssa Oliver, she's one of my focused with Angela Duncan family members. Alyssa Oliver, you were drawn. So make sure that I know I'm excited to send this to her. Make sure that you get with me and that you message me and send me your information. I'll get with you. I'll message you and get your information. I do want to give yours away too. So I'm going to have to buy another one. This one's mine. So I'm going to have to purchase another one.
I'll give you another one for the person.
Oh,
well, that's fine. That's perfectly fine.
And I'll have it for them and everything. It is unbelievable.
So not only do I want you to give a book away, I also want you to give a 30-minute one-on-one to someone.
Oh, okay. Can it be me?
You know you got me all the time. You can ask anything you want to ask.
Can it be me? No, miss it.
We are kingdom sisters. It's on.
Okay. It is yeah, we could keep going how God connected us and how much we have in common. It's unbelievable. With that said, Miss Paige Hopper,
yes,
I'm so grateful for you. Let me throw that up there. If you would like to donate to this ministry, you can go to my website, amduncangroup.com. There's a donate button at the bottom. Give whatever the Lord places on your heart. If you have been blessed by this show, by the show, by Focus, there's a way. A lot of you always say, how can I bless the ministry? Well, there it is. With that said, Paige, I cannot wait to have you back. We're going to have to get back on the phone.
What because, an honor.
Yes. I would like to go back to back, but you need to check your schedule. I know you're a busy woman. I would love to do part two next week, but I'm not going to put you on the spot. So check your schedule.
No pressure.
I'll get with your assistant.
Oh, we are sisters.
I'll get with your assistant and I will check your availability, but you will be back. Thank you so much for allowing the Holy Spirit to just,
pour
into us and to use you today. I'm just blown away. I can't wait.
God bless you. God bless you.
God bless you. And we will see you next time.
All right.
Mm. I'm going to place up your information so they can see it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love you, sis. Bye-bye.
Love you too. Bye.